and then he thought that he would become a doctor, a fashionable doctor. He would work among the nobility, and possibly he could save 70 or 80 lives in his career, and then he would have a clean sheet with which to start another life at the end of this. The impending one. One of the men spoke for the first time. "We have, of course, been watching your thoughts in this globe," and he gestured to a globe let into the table which Algernon had not seen before because it had been covered up, but now it was glowing and showing Algernon's thoughts. As Algernon blushed deeply at the realization that all he had thought had been revealed, so the image in the globe blushed deeply also. The chairman spoke, "Yes, I can thoroughly recommend that you become a doctor, but I do not at all recommend that you become a society doctor. This is the plan which I would recommend in your case." The chairman stopped and riffled through some papers, and then said, "You have taken life, you have maimed and mutilated others." Algernon rose to his feet. "No. I have not maimed, I have not mutilated," the chairman interrupted. "Yes. By your orders others have been killed, others have been maimed and mutilated, and you bear the blame quite as much as the persons who actually did the acts. But you are listening to me, and you had better listen carefully, for I shall not repeat what I am saying. You should become a doctor, but a doctor in a poor district where you can work among the poor, and you will start your life under poor conditions, no longer a member of the aristocracy but one who has to claw his way up. And in the 30th year of that life will be ended, and you will return here if you repeat your suicide, or, if not, you will go to a higher plane of the astral where you will be prepared according to how well you have performed in the life which you are about to undergo." There was considerable discussion for some time, and then the chairman knocked with his gavel and said, "We will meet again to plan the parents you will have, to plan the area to which you shall be born, and to arrange the date. Until that time you may return to the house of rest. The meeting is now adjourned." Algernon and the doctor walked somberly along the garden paths, neither saying a word, and then the doctor took Algernon into the house of rest and showed him a suitable room, saying, "I will come back for you later when I am so instructed." With the briefest of nods he turned away and left, and Algernon sat in a chair with his head in his hands, the picture of misery, thinking of all that he had seen, thinking of all that he had done, and thinking, "Well, if this is purgatory, thank goodness there is no hell." Chapter 5. Algernon ruffled his hair between his clenched fingers. He felt decidedly unhappy. Yes, well, he had committed suicide. Fine, he did it, now he was paying for it, and he was going to pay for it some more. He sat there wondering where it was going to end, how it was going to end. He reviewed in his mind all the incidents which had occurred since he arrived on this, the plane of purgatory. So it's wrong to be an aristocrat, eh? It's wrong to be of blue blood, eh? He muttered aloud to himself, glowering down at the floor. Then he spun around at the opening of the door. At the vision which entered, a most attractive nurse. He rose to his feet, his face beaming like the morning sun. "Ah!" he exulted. "An angel come to take me away from this benighted place." He eyed the nurse with unconcealed eagerness, saying, "What pulchritude in a place like this!" "What, stop!" said the nurse, "I am quite immune to your blandishments. You men are all the same, you think of one thing only when you come to this plane, and I can tell you we women are thoroughly tired of all the come-ons which you try." "Sit down," she said, "I have to talk to you and take you to a different place. But first of all I could not help hearing what you were mumbling about when I came in." "After you, miss," said Algernon with much gallantry. The nurse sat and Algernon hastened to take his seat beside her. He was most piqued when she quickly moved her seat away so that she was facing him. "Now, 53, she said. Algernon held up his hand. "You are mistaken, miss, I am not 53, I am Algernon Street Claire de Bonkers," he said. The nurse sniffed audibly and tossed her head. "Don't be stupid," she replied, "you are not in a play now, you are here on this plane between acts, as one might phrase it." She held up her hand to stop him from speaking, and then said, "There are two things in particular which I want to talk to you about first. One is that here you are not Algernon whatever it is, but you are number 53. You are near enough a convict here, You have been convicted of the crime of suicide, and here you are referred to by the last two figures of your basic frequency, in your case 53. Poor Algernon felt his mind boggle. Basic frequency? He said, I am afraid you are talking completely above my comprehension. I have not the slightest idea of what you are talking about. My name is Algernon and not 53. You have a lot to learn, young man, the nurse retorted with some asperity. You seem to be remarkably ignorant for a person who professes to be of near royal blood, but let us deal with that first. You seem to think that because a particular act upon earth made it necessary for you to be as a titled person that you carry it on over here. You do not. Oh. Algernon burst out, you must be a communist or something. You are adopting a communist theme if you think that no one is entitled to their status, that all men are equal. The nurse sighed with resigned exasperation, and then tiredly said, you are indeed ignorant. I am going to tell you here and now that communism is a crime at least the equal of suicide because, whereas a person who commits suicide commits a crime against himself, yet communism is a crime against the whole race, a crime against humanity. Communism, in fact, is as a cancer in the body of the world. We are not in favor of communism, and in time, after much time, communism will eventually be stamped out because it is founded on false precepts. But that is not what we are discussing. She referred to some papers in her hands, raised her head and looked straight at Algernon saying, we have to get you away from this dreadful idea that you have that because you were a titled person once you are always going to be a titled person. Let us consider things in the terms of the earth. Think of a writer who was down on that world some time ago. His name was Shakespeare. He wrote plays which are very familiar to you, and people act the parts which he wrote. Sometimes there will be a villain in the play, sometimes there will be a king portrayed, but I am going to put it to you quite bluntly that people would laugh to scorn any actor who, having played the king in Hamlet, went about for the rest of his life imagining that he was still a king in reality. People go down to the earth to take that particular part in the play of life which will enable them to learn the tasks which they have to learn, and having learned their task and returned to the astral world, then, of course, they discard the imaginary identity and revert to their own natural identity which is determined by their own superior over-self. Algernon, or rather, 53 from now on, shuddered, and replied oh dear, oh dear. I really do dislike blue stockings. When one has a beautiful young girl who starts preaching and teaching then really my emotions become quite turned off. Oh, how delightful, said the nurse, for I found your thoughts to be highly unpleasant, and I am glad indeed that I have dampened your very obvious lust. She again referred to her notes, checking one paper against another, and then she said, you have been sent to the wrong home of rest. I have to take you to another one which is of a more temporary nature because you are having to go back to the earth at the earliest possible moment. You are, in fact, just a transient here and there is little that we can do for you except pass you on as quickly as we may. Please follow me. With that she rose to her feet and led the way to the door. 53, ex Algernon, darted ahead of her and held the door open with a slightly mocking bow. After you. Madame, after you, he said. The nurse swept in high dignity through the door and bumped into the doctor who was just about to enter. Oops. Oh, I am so sorry, doctor, I did not see you, exclaimed the nurse. Oh, think nothing of it, nurse, think nothing of it. I was coming to collect number 53 because the board wants to see him again. Do you have anything to say to him first? The nurse smiled at the doctor. And replied, no, I shall be glad to get rid of him. He seems to be rather fresh for a man in his position. I have been trying to teach him that blue blood does not count here but at least it is a bit higher than one with communist blood. But, doctor, the nurse said quickly, after the board has finished with him he has to go to the home for transients. There was a mix-up in the orders and I believe that that is why you brought him here. Will you see that he goes to the home for transients? The doctor nodded and said, yes, nurse, I will attend to it. Then he nodded to 53 and said, come along, we are late already. With that he turned and led the way down another corridor which Algernon? No, 53, had not seen before. He, poor fellow, looked decidedly downcast and muttered, "Purgatory? This is purgatory all right. I'm sure I shall be several inches shorter by the time I get out of here. I've walked myself down to my knee joints almost." The doctor, who had caught his mutter, laughed delightedly and retorted, "Yes, indeed, you will be very, very much shorter when you leave here because you will be an infant inside its mother." The doctor and 53 turned into a long corridor. Two guards sat one on each side of the entrance. One nodded briefly to the doctor and said, "Is this 53? "Yes, it is," said the doctor. "Are you the one who is going to accompany us?" The guard on the right-hand side rose to his feet and replied, "I am the one who goes with you, so let's not waste any more time, shall we?" Turning, he strode down the corridor at quite a smart pace. 53 and the doctor had to step out briskly in order to keep up with him. They walked for quite a long way. 53 was horrified to see that no matter how far they walked, the corridor seemed to stretch on endlessly, endlessly. But there came a diversion. There was a branching of the corridor. The guard, or guide, 53 wasn't sure which he was, took the left turn and went on a little further and then knocked smartly at a door, and stood back. "Come in," said a voice, and the guard quickly threw open the door so that first the doctor, then 53 and lastly the guard entered, the latter shutting the door firmly behind him. "Come and sit here, please," said a voice. 53 moved forward and took the seat indicated. "Now we have to discuss your future. We want you to get back on Earth at the very earliest possible moment compatible with a woman's biological functions," said the voice. 53 looked about him. He had been rather dazzled by the amount of light in the building. It seemed to be a very light building indeed, and there were many flashing lights all over the place. One wall, he saw with some astonishment, appeared to be of frosted glass over which at intervals flickering colored lights passed quickly and vanished. He saw that he was in a room, the like of which he had never before envisaged. It appeared to be of a clinical austerity, not white but a very restful shade of green. About him there were five or six, he could not count them precisely, people dressed in greenish overalls. He was quite uncertain of the exact number of people about because it seemed at intervals some people came into the room and others disappeared from the room, but this was no time to be paying attention to trivia because the first man was speaking again. "I have very carefully examined and considered all the information which has been put before me. I have gone very thoroughly into your past before you went down to the earth. And I find that although according to your lights you did fairly well on the earth, yet according to the mores and penates of the real life you were a failure, and you compounded your failure by committing the crime of suicide. So now we want to help you." 53 looked dreadfully sour, and could not help bursting out, "Help me? Help me? Since I have been here I have been criticized, I have been reprimanded for almost everything. I have been reprimanded for being one of the upper class, and I have been reprimanded for saying that perhaps I should have been a communist. What am I to believe? If I am here for punishment, then why not get on with it?" The elderly slender man with the grey hair sitting in front of 53 looked really distressed, and remarkably compassionate. "I am so sorry indeed that you feel like this," he said. "It is your attitude which is making everything so difficult for us, because we have come to the inescapable conclusion that as you went to the earth as a player in a rather exalted status, that has affected your psyche, and so that makes it necessary that when you are sent back you will have to be sent back to rather poor conditions, otherwise you are going to be quite intolerable and you are going to give your over-self absolutely false impressions. Do I make myself clear?" he asked. 53 glowered and retorted, "No, definitely not. I just don't know what you are talking about when you talk about the overself and all that. So far all I have been told is just a mass of gibberish, and I have no sense of guilt for what I have done. Therefore, according to English law, I have done no wrong." The elderly man felt his determination harden. It seemed to him that this man, this number 53, was just being difficult for the sake of being difficult. You are completely wrong in your reference to English law, the interrogator said, because if you knew anything at all about English law, you would know that one statement is to the effect that ignorance of the law is no excuse, so that if you break the law of England and then you claim you did not know there was such a law, then you are still found guilty because you should have acquainted yourself with the existence of such a law. And please do not try to be truculent with me, because I am one of those who hold your destiny in my hands, and if you antagonize us too much, then we can make your conditions hard indeed. Just pay attention and keep your truculence in check. 53 shuddered at the tone of the voice and recognized when he was defeated. He said, "Sir, but what am I to do when terms are used which have no meaning for me? What, for instance, is the over-self?" "Later," said the interrogator, "you will be taught all about this. It will suffice for the moment if I say that your over-self is what you would refer to as your eternal, immortal soul, and you now are just a puppet or extension of that over-self, almost, as one might say, like a pseudopod, an extension from your over-self materialized into material substance, so that you may learn by actual hard physical experience that which is unobtainable to the far more tenuous over-self." Poor 53 felt his head reeling. He did not really understand any of this, but he thought that as he had been told he would be instructed later, he had better cut things short, and now he should just listen. So he nodded dumbly in answer to the interrogator's raised eyebrows. The interrogator, or perhaps a better word to use would be counselor, looked down at his papers and then said, "You have to return as a child of poor parents, those who are without social status, because the act which you have been called upon to play in your previous life seems seriously to have warped your understanding and your perceptions, and you place yourself into a class to which you are not entitled. We are going to suggest, and you have the right to refuse, that you are born to parents in London, in the area known as Tower Hamlets. There are some very suitable parents to be near Wapping High Street. You will have the advantage of being born quite close to the Tower of London and to the Mint and to very famous dock areas where there is shocking poverty and suffering. Here, if you agree, and if you have the moral and mental fiber, you can work your way up to be a physician or surgeon, and in saving the lives of those around you, you can atone for the lives that you have taken and caused to be taken. But you will have to decide quickly, because these women who we have chosen as prospective mothers for you are already pregnant, and that means we have no time to waste. I am going to show you," he said, "the area which will be your locale." He turned and waved his hand to the wall, which 53 had taken to be of glass, of frosted glass. As he did so, it sprang into life, life in color, and 53 could see an area of London which he knew only indifferently. The river. Thames, yes, Southwark Bridge, London Bridge, and then the bascules of Tower Bridge moved on to the screen. And to the side the Tower of London itself could be seen. He sat there quite enthralled, looking at the absolutely clear pictures, seeing traffic on the streets. He was most intrigued to see horseless carriages and very, very few horse-drawn vehicles indeed. He exclaimed on the matter, and the councillor said, "Oh yes, horse-drawn traffic has almost disappeared. Things have changed considerably since you have been here, and you have been here quite a time, you know. You were unconscious for about 3 years. Now everything is motorized, motor buses, motor vans, and motor cars. Things are supposed to have improved, but I personally deplore the passing of the horse from the streets." 53 turned his attention to the picture again. Mint Street, Cable Street, Shadwell, East Smithfield, the Highway, Thomas More Street, Street Catharines, Wapping High Street, and Wapping Wall. The councillor said, "Well, we have 5 women who are pregnant. I want you to choose which area you prefer of that shown. Of the 5 women, one is the wife of an innkeeper, or I believe you might call him a publican. The second is the wife of a greengrocer. The third is the wife of an ironmonger. The fourth is the wife of a motor bus driver. And the fifth, she is again a lodging house keeper. I say again, because the first one is an innkeeper. Now, you have a right of choice and no one will influence you. I can give you a list of them and you will have 24 hours upon which to meditate over this matter, and if you need any advice you merely have to ask." 53 sat back and gazed at the living pictures on that wall, seeing people move about, seeing the strange costumes that women were now wearing, marveling at the horseless carriages going along, marveling too at the amount of building going on. Then he turned to the counselor and said, "Sir, I would ask you particularly that I be permitted to see the 10 people, 5 fathers and 5 mothers, from whom I am expected to pick my parents. I would like to see them, I would like to see their home conditions." The counselor, or interrogator, shook his head slowly with real regret. "Ah, my friend," he mourned, "that is a request beyond my ability to grant, for we never, never do such a thing. We can merely give you the details and you make your choice. You are not permitted to see your parents, for that would be an invasion of their privacy. Now I suggest you return to your transit hotel and think about the whole matter." So saying, he bowed slightly to the doctor and to 53, picked up his papers and left the room. The doctor said, "Come, let us go," and rose to his feet. 53 rose reluctantly and followed him from the room. Together they retraced their steps, accompanied by the guard. Together they went along that corridor which seemed so endless and which now seemed even longer. At last they came out into the open again, and 53 took a deep breath, inhaling energy and life as he did so. The guard left them to return to his post, and the doctor and 53 continued on to a fairly dull grey building which 53 had vaguely noticed before but passed off as of no interest. They entered the front door and a man at a desk said, "Third on the left," and took no more interest in them. They went on to third on the left and entered a bare room. There was a bed and a chair, and a small table on which 53 was interested to observe a large folder with the number 53 stamped on. "Well, there it is," said the doctor. "You have 24 hours from now to ponder upon your decision, and after that time I shall come for you and we will have to go and see what can be seen, and prepare you for going back to the earth. Goodbye." The doctor turned and made his way out of the room, shutting the door behind him, shutting the door on 53, who stood disconsolately in the middle of the room, apprehensively fingering the pages enclosed within the folder marked 53. 53 glowered at the closing door and put his hands behind his back. With head sunk upon his chest, he paced the room, and paced, and paced. Eye after eye he walked about the room, and then, quite tired with the exertion, he flung himself into a chair and gazed early through the window. 53, eh? He muttered to himself. "Like a convict, and all for doing something which I thought was good. What was the point of living a life as neither man nor woman?" He put his chin in his hands and crossed his legs and looked a typical picture of misery. Then he thought, "Oh, did I think I was doing the right thing? They may have something in what they say, after all. I think it's very likely that I was giving way to self-pity, but here I am now given a number like a convict at Dartmoor and saddled with the decision of saying what I am going to be next. I don't know what I'm going to be. I don't know that it matters at all anyway. I shall probably end up again in this place." He jumped to his feet again and went to the window, and thought he would take a walk around the garden. Carefully he pushed and the window swung open easily to his touch. He went to step outside and it was like stepping into a thin invisible sheet of rubber. It stretched enough to prevent him from getting a bruise, and then to his astonishment it just contracted and he was propelled gently and effortlessly back into the room. "Convict after all, eh?" he said to himself. And then he sat down in the chair again. For hour after hour he sat there thinking, wondering, in a state of complete indecision. "I thought that after death I would go to heaven," he said to himself, and immediately followed by it, "Well, no, I suppose I didn't think it at all. I didn't know what to think. I have seen so many people die and there has been no sign of a soul leaving the body, so I came to the conclusion that all this that the parsons yammer about, life after death etc., was hogwash." He jumped to his feet again and started the endless marching up and down the room, thinking all the time and unconsciously talking to himself. "I remember in the mess one evening we were discussing it, and Captain Broadbreeches expressed the very determined view that when you were dead and that's all there was to it. He said of the men, women, children and horses he'd seen killed, but never, He told us, had he seen a soul rise out of a dead body and get winging heavenwards in his mind's eye, he saw again life as it was in England. While he was a schoolboy, and then when first he was a cadet. He saw himself as a newly commissioned officer, proudly getting on a ship to go and fight the Dutch. He used to think of the Boers as the Dutch because that was their original ethnic group, Dutch. But as he looked back, he could see that the Boers were merely a group of farmers fighting for what they believed to be the right to choose their own way of life, unfettered by domination from England. The door opened and a man came in. "I do suggest, number 53, that you try to get some rest. You are merely wearing yourself out with this endless pacing around. In a few hours you will have to undergo a quite traumatic experience. The more rest you get now, the easier will it be for you later on." 53 turned sullenly towards him and in his best military manner said, "Get out." The man shrugged his shoulders, turned and left the room, and 53 went on with his brooding and his pacing. What was this about the kingdom of heaven? He said to himself. The parsons always had this talk about other mansions, other planes of existence, other forms of life. I remember now a padre saying that until Christianity came to the earth, everyone was condemned to damnation, to eternal suffering, to eternal torments, and that only the Roman Catholics would go to heaven. Now, I wonder how long the world has been in existence, and why should all those people before Christianity be condemned when they didn't know that they had to be saved? March, march, march. He went across the room, back again, across again, and back again endlessly. If he had been on a treadmill, he thought, he would have covered quite a number of miles going up steps. At least that would have been harder work than walking backwards and forwards across the room. At last, angry and frustrated, he flung himself on the bed and lay there sprawling. This time no darkness descended, he just lay there full of hatred, full of bitter resentment, and the hot salt tears came spurting from his eyes. Furiously he tried to brush them away with the back of his hands, and then at last he turned on his face and had a spasm of sobbing into a pillow. After what seemed to be several eternities, there was a knock on the door which he ignored. The knock came again, and again he ignored it. After a decent interval the door was slowly opened and there was the doctor. He glanced in for a moment, and then said, "Ah, are you ready? 24 hours have now elapsed." 53 put a leg over the side of the bed, then lethargically put the other one over. Slowly he sat up. "Have you decided to which family you are going?" asked the doctor. "No, damn it, no, I haven't given it a thought." "Ah," said the doctor, "so you are fighting every inch of the way, eh? Well, it doesn't matter to any of us, you know, although you will find it hard to believe. We are indeed trying to help you, and if you, by your procrastination, miss this opportunity, you will find that opportunities are fewer and fewer and the families get less and less." The doctor went to the table and picked up the folder marked 53, and idly he flipped through it. "You have a choice of 5 families here," he said, "and some get no choice at all, some are just directed. Let me tell you something." He eased himself into the chair, leaned back and crossed his legs, gazing sternly at 53. Then he said, "You are like a spoiled child giving way to immature rage. You committed a crime, you messed up your life, now you have to pay for it, and we are trying to arrange that you pay for it on the most comfortable terms. But if you will not cooperate with us, and if you just insist on behaving like a spoiled baby, then eventually you will come to the point when you have no choice where you can go. You may find yourself as the child of some underprivileged black family in Mombasa, or possibly sent as a girl child to a family in Calcutta. Girls in Calcutta are not worth much, people want boys, they can help, and as a girl child you might find yourself sold into prostitution or into conditions where you are a virtual slave." Poor 53 sat bolt upright on the edge of the bed, his hands very tightly grasping the edge of the mattress, his mouth wide open and his eyes wild and staring. He looked much like a wild animal that had just been captured and put in a cage for the first time. The doctor looked at him, but there was no sign of recognition, No sign that 53 had heard the remarks. If you persist in your stupid recalcitrant attitude and make it so much more difficult for us, then as a last resort we may send you to an island where only lepers live. You have to live out the other 30 years which you skipped before. There are no two ways about it. There is no way of overcoming it. It is the law of nature. So you'd better come to your senses.